Welcome to Game of Thrones off-season here at the AfterBuzz TV studios. On this episode, and in the spirit of the holiday season, we're going to be talking the most magical moments of our most magical show. Abracadabra.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
She didn't see it coming.
Wow, I missed that.
Woo! Magic, it's all around
you.
It's
all around us.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Game of Thrones off-season. Basically, this is a show where we get together in the AfterBuzz TV studios to catch up on all the latest Game of Thrones fan theories, news, and fun topics of discussion. As I said before, this episode, we're talking magic.
Magic!
It is so real! But first, Kristen... This is Kristen Snyder, everybody. Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, a.k.a. Cinematic Escape, the most magical hostess in all the lands.
Aww.
And I'm Ryan Mulati, and we can't wait to dive into our subject material today. But first, let's talk some news. Kristen, what's going on in the magical world of Game of Thrones as we know it?
Well, we have a sort of premiere date for Season 8. They say it's going to be the end of April, either April 21st or 28th. So the wait is almost over. We got about three more of these shows, and then we'll be talking about the show again.
Three more of our podcasts.
Yeah, of our monthly podcast, making everybody excited about Season 8. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be the new show.
And then you can find us here every week after that.
Yeah, for six episodes.
Only six.
Season eight's only six.
I don't know,
episodes.
We'll have to see if we do any kind of show reunion with all of our hosts or something.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
We'll do something for sure.
In the meantime, we got our monthly show, and I can't wait for April.
Yeah.
I can, but I...
You know who else can't wait?
Who can't wait?
Littlefinger.
Ah,
Aiden Gillen, he spoke to ET Online and said he always thought it'd be nice for Game of Thrones to have a happy ending, but he can't imagine it would be appropriate. He goes on to say, it's a great thing. I'll be excited to watch it as an audience member. He's hoping, though, that it's something unexpected. I'm sure it will be. That's why we all love Game of Thrones. It's that shock value, which is why I agree with him. I do not think it's going to be a happy ending. And he admitted that the general consensus during his time on set was that nobody knew how the show would end, including the showrunners and the writers.
That's interesting that you say that, because I think it was the last episode that we did was on the writing.
Mm-hmm.
You hosted that one for us. Again. We had a writer in, Professor Jeremy Dan from USC, and we were talking about how crucial it was to know the ending before you even start, because, you know, so many things are intertwined, so many levels, so many depths of plot in this show, and it's hard to imagine that they just didn't know where it was going.
No one knows. Yeah. So
I mean, I guess that's
hard.
Fair, because, you know, when you start off a show like this, you can't really imagine that it's going to be a worldwide phenomenon like it has been. But
one more thing that's exciting in 2019, after Season 8 is all done, you can buy the box set of Seasons 1 through 8, and there's also going to be a reunion special on that box set with old characters like Ned and Jason Momoa, who played Khal Drogo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, probably worth the buy just for that bonus show.
Perfect timing, too, for Christmas next year.
Yeah. You know what? I really wish that somehow we had another host with us tonight. I just think it'd make the show more fun.
Well, keep wishing. Rub your lamp and wish hard.
I think it's going to work.
Did you know that the origin of the genie myth that we're so familiar with from Disney's Aladdin came from the mythology of the djinn, which was a mystical, magical, kind of warlock kind of creature you could make wishes to back in the Arabian Nights saga, one of the oldest scriptures or book of stories that we have, that humanity has still left intact. So the djinn, or the genie. So rub your lamp and wish for another host.
If you're a magician, Ryan, you'll make this happen for me.
Hello, no. I'm Ryan the Wizard. And on today's episode, we might make someone disappear.
Or appear.
Hopefully. In the meantime, thank you for your news. Yes. I'm looking forward to next year's season, and you better believe I'm getting that box set for somebody I know. if she doesn't use all her wishes first. So, let us dive in to the magical world of Game of Thrones.
Please.
Magic.
Yeah.
Magic is real. When you ask the average person what they think magic is, I mean, not saying you're an average person, but Kristen, when I say the word magic, what does that mean to you?
I would say that it means like an unexplainable appearance or disappearance or phenomenon. Basically, anything that's unexplainable in my mind is magic. Like, a lot of people think that, like, technology and creating a website is magic because we don't know how it happened. So I would agree with all those. Like, it's something that we can't explain. We don't know how it happened. It's magic to us.
There is a quote that I'm not going to get completely right, but it goes something like, any sufficiently advanced form of technology is indistinguishable from magic. As in, if you brought an iPad with some kind of portable Wi-Fi, because, like, I mean, iPad doesn't really do much about internet, come on. Yeah. But if you had, you know, the internet and the Wi-Fi and you brought it back to 1,000 years ago and showed them an iPad, that would be a magical tablet. It'd be a magic mirror, so to speak, because they just don't understand how it works. Maybe magic is real and we just don't know how it works, but I think the key is that magic cannot be explained, right?
Right.
It's occurrences and happenings that cannot be explained with our physical laws of the universe. And, well, I believe in magic. And you know what? There's a lot of parallels between the magic that we believe in as humans throughout human history and the magic in our modern fantasy tales. So let's go through our most magical moments in Game of Thrones and try to make parallels and connections between the magic of their world and the magic of our world, starting with our first magical moment.
Oh!
When Dany hatches her dragons.
Yes!
I mean, there's a lot of magical moments with dragons, but I think this is the moment where we saw there was definitely going to be a whole nother world of magic in this Game of Thrones world.
Yeah, right? I mean, not just...
Season one, it was kind of a season one finale kind of thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone had been talking about it. We were waiting. It was something that no one in the show believed existed. And us as audience members are like, how are they going to pull this off? So, and it was also said during Eras, where there was an abundance in the land, that it was more magical when there was more dragons. It was warmer. The winters have become longer now that there aren't dragons, obviously. And it's grown colder. So I almost feel like they're saying, like, we need, you know, Daenerys in the throne and more dragons for everything to become okay again in balance with nature.
Right.
But no one told us she was going to have fireproof flesh and be able to go sit on fire and bring these babies.
When I first saw that, I figured it was some kind of spell or something. Yeah. I didn't realize that she herself was fireproof.
I don't know that she did either, honestly. Right. It was just about her children, and like they always say, you know, mothers will do anything for their babies, and she did.
Well, it had been a long time since anyone had seen dragons, to the point where even though there's still skeletons, you know, skulls remaining, most of them were destroyed, but there were still a few, people still thought they were mythological creatures. And that often happens even in our history. There's something, a lure of a creature or an event that is mystified and deified,
right?
And you know, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Yeah, I mean, you know? This really began, I feel like, when people started talking about Daenerys and started spreading rumors about her and the fact that she, you know, had these dragons and she was able to hatch them, and you know, she was had this obviously not affected by fire, this fireproof skin.
Mm-hmm.
I think they started believing that she was magic. So, and so did we. I think that's when we really started to get on her side, that, you know, maybe she is what the Seven Kingdoms needs.
Right. Remember when the comet fell? The red comet, stars fall for dragons, and you know, no man. What was her name? The wildling.
Wildling?
The one who took care of Bran for the longest time.
It begins with an M.
Yeah, it does. We'll get back to it. But in our world, people have.
I can't think of things.
Right? Go ahead and get us down in the comments, you guys. We love your support. In our world, people have believed in dragons for the longest time, and a lot of people think it might have been from comets or meteors, you know, stringing clouds throughout the sky. But in his book, An Instinct for Dragons, anthropologist Dave E. Jones suggests a hypothesis that humans, just like monkeys and other animals...
Mira Reed, yeah.
inherently, instinctively react to snakes. He found that approximately 390 people in 1,000 are afraid of snakes. And notes that fear of snakes is especially prominent in children, even in areas where snakes are rare. So it's... The earliest attests to dragons all resemble snakes or bear with snake-like attributes. So it could have been that just an inherent fear of snakes maybe gave way to the mythology of a larger threat of dragons.
That makes sense to me.
But dragons is something that is seen across almost all cultures and all periods of time to a modern day. Modern people, there's documentaries out there where people believe in dragons. They believe that there's a cover-up. They believe, there's a lot of stuff on the dark web out there. I personally think that there are plenty of creatures in the deep sea that we haven't discovered. And sure, there's probably reptiles and there may be even a Bigfoot, but I don't know about dragons. I don't know if they might have existed, a flying serpent
of
some kind.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure we just don't have the records of them. And even in space, what creatures are out there that we don't know about?
I don't know. But, I got to tell you, I could definitely use another perspective on this.
I agree.
Where's that lamp? Where's that lamp? You know, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna try to use some of my Ryan the Wizard magicianry to wish for another host. A host, preferably, maybe a small child. I don't know. Maybe a small child. Maybe a man child. But someone who knows something about dragons, maybe? Someone is... Maybe who read the books? A devilishly handsome fellow. I don't know. I might be asking for too much, but... I wish... I wish... Abracadabra, Abracawild. I wish for a host named David Child. Just in line at Starbucks or something? Where?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was just buying a Christmas present
for
my mom.
Ah, yes.
Not for you.
I mean,
I was buying
you
a Christmas
been
present.
Been thinking about us a little bit.
Yes, I've been thinking about you every single day.
Welcome back, dude. We missed
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
I guess we got two wishes left.
Maybe something else
can
happened
you,
during
can you
the
wish
show.
For that present for my mom? It was.
He was in the middle of buying it.
I got Amazon Prime. You're good. I'll talk after.
Okay, go.
Hey, you know, since you're just joining us,
what you guys
talking
about?
Through the ether.
Yeah.
We're talking about the most magical moments.
Oh, magical!
And we're talking about dragons and how magical they are.
I love dragons.
Specifically the moment of how Daenerys hatched her dragons, but I think we've graduated to just dragons overall as magical creatures. I think you did a whole episode on dragons, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I did I talked about monsters and... the beasts and all sorts of things. So dragons were very involved there. But yeah.
Yeah, so tell us, Dave. Do you believe in dragons? Mm-hmm.
Do I believe dragons
existed? Do you believe in the mythical creatures such as Leviathan, Hydra,
right.
Draco?
Draco? Well, they're all versions of things that have actually existed. Mm-hmm. They're all... things. I think when you're looking at dinosaur bones, I think it's easy to be like, these probably breathed fire.
Yeah.
these are probably a thing. So I think that's where a lot of it comes from. But yeah, there's probably real dragons out there. Yeah.
It's almost as if magic incarnate, if it were to be a creature, it would be a dragon.
Uh-huh.
Or a phoenix. Or a griffin. But I feel like dragon wins. Dragon's the most mythical, magical creature there is. And it shares that sentiment with
dragons,
most cultures.
Dragons have the most... This is not part of Game of Thrones, but they also... When they have a personality like Smaug of Lord of the Rings, they tend to be even more... Smaug. However you pronounce it. Smaug or Smaug.
Smaug.
S-M-A-U-G. So a lot of people argue over that. But Smaug is how I always call them. But, Yeah, he was like, there's a hoarding effect with dragons that's not a part of Game of Thrones. Mm. That they always, like, are on a big pile of gold, and that's so people can, like, find dragons, have to kill them in order to get the gold right. and the princess that they're holding, and so they...
Because there's got to be an incentive, because, like, why would you go
Yeah, you're not going to go dragons. Just to kill a dragon for the sake of killing a dragon.
You got to save a princess, get a bunch of gold.
Get a bunch of gold. But in this case...
In that order.
Yeah. In this case, they're kind of weapons of mass destruction in this, in, like, Game of Thrones. They're used as weapons of war that they make. That's why no one wants to touch Daenerys.
Do you think that there's a future for dragons in this world, this post?
Once the show's, like, done, do you think
the dragons are done? After this great standoff between ice and fire, you know, are dragons, you know, was there... was there a reason why they died out in Westeros and Essos? Or, right. you know, was it natural selection? Did Daenerys bring in this Jurassic Park element into the world where, you know, the dragons naturally found their leave and now she brought them back into an ecosystem that can't really support them?
Yeah, and it kind of seems like, and maybe you guys have already touched upon this, but when the dragons came back, it brought back all the magic. Mm. There was, like, no magic in that world, and a lot of people... when they were watching the show, kind of got turned off as the show went on and became more and more fantastical. Mm. And the dragons came back, and that brought back the White Walkers, and that brought back everything. The White Walkers, we technically saw them first, but, like...
Well, should we move off of dragons and onto the next?
Ooh.
And onto the next?
To our Santa
Clauses. Because you're absolutely right. After the dragons came, the big season one climax, we didn't see much... magic until that point.
But except for the very first scene of Game of Thrones, which was the White Walkers taking down a whole bunch of people.
Right.
And then you kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, now we're just in medieval times for a while.
Monsters? Anyways, let's talk about politics and killing kids and incest.
Yeah.
Let's focus on that.
It goes hand in hand. Dirty hands, but they're in hands.
Dirty hands? Push the kid out the window. And then fondle your sister. Move on.
And now we have dragons. So, what comes after that? More magical moments.
More magical moments.
Let's go on to the next most magical moment in our series. I think that people will agree that this is a pretty magical moment. A lot of us saw it coming, but some of us didn't. When Jon Snow comes back to life.
Yeah.
Back to life. Back to reality. That was the song that was famously playing.
Yeah, and then they had to cut
in the
it.
Background.
They had to cut it right at the.
Yeah, right.
Couldn't get licensing rights.
The budget.
Hollywood, man.
They spent it all on dragons and direwolves.
I mean, it must have cost a lot to bring a man back to life. The only other real familiar case of resurrection that I think most people would know about would be in the stories of Christianity, where Jesus resurrected Lazarus. And then later was resurrected himself.
Yeah.
And those are the most prominent stories in human culture, I think, about resurrection. We can get into zombies. We'll get into that in our next moment.
Right.
But as far as a person truly coming back and being reanimated and being who they were, there's reincarnation, but we're talking resurrection.
And there's also the Egyptian sense of coming back and kind of going on to the netherworld, but coming back in that sense. And there's a bit of resurrection there.
Right. You go through, if you follow the instructions in the Book of the Dead, you get to the god with the alligator for a head. They weigh your heart against a feather.
Yeah.
And if your heart's heavier than a feather, then the alligator eats you into eternity and you're no more. You just don't exist anymore. But if your heart is...
as
light or lighter than a feather, meaning that you don't have any
sins weighing you down,
then you pass into eternal life. And luckily, if you're lucky enough, you were wrapped up in a nice little sleepy mummy bag with all your possessions around you.
And Anubis is a big part of that, and he's a cool like god because he's got a jackal head.
Yeah, it's cool.
He's cool.
And we cross into, and it's an interesting subject, the one of magic, because you look throughout history and then you start to say, okay, well, at what point is this no longer occult magic and is this a religion?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some people who, if magic is real and real to them, they don't use the word magic. Maybe it's just a straight up belief system.
Yeah, and there's always the I forget where this comes from, but the magic, advanced technology is also sometimes seen as like a form of magic until you understand it. Right. Or the world.
I said that earlier.
Yeah. I tried to.
Yeah, there you go. But it was, and when we talk about the dragons too, they're kind of a form of that because they're like, you know, weapons of mass destruction, they're magic, but you can just make those tanks. If you brought tanks into the Middle Ages, people will see them as, like, these magical beasts.
Right, and if you look at dragons and their anatomy, it seems like, well, maybe, you know, in another world, they could have existed.
Yeah. It's like unicorns.
There's nothing saying that unicorns can't exist.
Unicorns is like, that's a blind spot for some people where they just like assume a unicorn exists because they know a narwhal exists.
Narwhals?
And they know like a horse exists. Why not unicorn?
I feel like if you throw a horn on anything else besides a dolphin or a puppy or a horse.
Besides a puppy?
Maybe a puppy is
a horn. I was going to say, a horn on a puppy. We're creating our own magical creatures.
You know what I want to talk about? Yes. I want to talk about how the Lord of Light is basically their faith system about, yeah, you know, bringing people back. And obviously we saw that with Thoros bringing back Beric, mm-hmm, Dondarrion, mm-hmm, multiple times.
Yeah.
But we saw it with Melisandre bringing back Jon. Mm-hmm. And this isn't like abracadabra, sweet, like, rabbit out of the hat magic. This is like the dark magic where you, like, you know, say sacrifice your first child and whatnot for them. I mean, I don't know what Melisandre and her conversations with the Lord of Light is, but, you know, it doesn't seem like a pure thing. I mean, this is their faith. And
what's interesting is when they resurrect, both of those guys, they didn't have to sacrifice anyone really. It was
didn't, but you would think, like, because that's what we've seen. That's, like, in the past, there's always, like, sacrifices for the dark magic. So, like, in this show, they didn't have to, but we haven't really seen implications of, you know, the Lord of Light and any kind of sacrifice you have to make. So, it is very magical, but in our eyes, at least me as a viewer, it appears as, like, a dark magic. I'm thinking, like, Pet Cemetery, you know what I mean?
Right,
like, They shouldn't come back and still be themselves and there not be something wrong with them or there wasn't a sacrifice, so.
It's also like Frankenhooker. Same problem happens in Frankenhooker.
I don't think I've seen that one.
I'm going to have to add that to the watch list. you know, the closest thing that we actually have documented as far as resurrection goes, there is there's a scientific, clinically dead and back to life syndrome called Lazarus syndrome.
Ooh.
It's unexplained, but there have been several dozen reports since it was kind of discovered back in like the 1960s, where it's a person has gone technically dead with their heartbeat had stopped,
mm-hmm,
and it was only after the efforts of resuscitation have stopped,
mm-hmm,
even hours later, that I guess pressure that was built up was released and the heart like starts up again.
Wow.
People have been buried.
Is that come something back to life. Is that something that still happens or is that just what like
probably back in the day?
It feels like because what they probably used to do back in the day is sometimes they used to bury a string with them that went to a bell. And it's so if they wake up in the grave, they can ring the bell. That's actually a thing that happened, which is horrifying.
Well, coming back to life, hopefully, isn't something that we'll ever have to see or experience ourselves. But
you will see. I plan. I'm going to have a big comeback. That's all I'm going to say.
Tie a bell to this guy.
Tie a bell to me, because I'll be ringing in the new year.
Oh.
But I also want to bring up, before we move on too much from the resurrection, there's also in the Game of Thrones world, the Drowned God, which uses, they have to drown and come back in order to be kind of a part of the religion. And it's very, very close to the Lord of Light, who brings people back from the dead. But, you know, the wetter
version of
it.
What is the saying? How's it go? What is dead may never die? Or
I think so.
I think that's how it goes, yeah.
If that is how it is, then
let's go with that.
What may dead may never die. I think that's what they say to each other. Yeah.
It kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what? You know what? When you think about it,
I plan on living forever. So far, so good.
Yeah.
All right.
If I die, then I can't die, right?
Moving on to a very similar subject of coming back from the dead in a way is our next most magical moment when the White Walkers and their army of the dead. When the Night King rose that army of the dead.
I love how this is the most magical moment.
It's not as, you know, Disney-esque magical, more as something that seems like it would be impossible becoming possible in front of Jon Snow's eyes.
Right.
We have this this army of the dead being risen right in front of him, which is a power that at that point we didn't realize. I mean, we knew wights existed.
Yeah.
But we just, I mean, I assumed up until that point that that was just something that happened north of the wall. Is when you, if you died north of the wall, is just the magic of that. And right. You just kind of, but it they're under the control of the White Walkers, and namely, the most control under the Night King.
Right.
But these wights aren't living. These wights are undead. Mm-mm. Some would even call them zombies.
Yeah. Some, except so, they don't have the same, you can't shoot them in the brain. That doesn't stop them.
No, it doesn't. Well, in yeah. our world, it goes going off as far back, probably as far as human history, but we have archaeologists that have unearthed many ancient graves from ancient Greece, which contain skeletons pinned down by rocks and other heavy objects, assumedly to prevent dead bodies from reanimating.
That's
so
just,
people have been fearful of this for a long time.
And you know, that's just that one guy in a coma that just came back.
Yeah.
And they're like, ah!
No. No. You know, Jim? Yeah, the guy who kicked it last week? Good, I hate that guy. No, no, no. He's back.
Oh, we gotta kill him. Oh, man.
Round two, Jim boy.
Before we move on from the White Walkers, though, I also magical,
yes,
and I don't know
got.
If this is further down in the list, is the dragon glass.
Mm, right.
Which is the only thing that can kill them, which I think is very magical. Because, like, there are very few things that can only be killed by one means, but they're always, you know, beasts and, like, disturbing. And, I mean, that's when you know you got a real monster and something mm-hmm. mythical and magical on your hands if they can only be killed one way.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think the dragon glass itself is very magical.
Also, Valyrian steel, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same.
True,
yeah,
true.
I would say to piggyback off of both of those, and some honorable mentions down here, there's also Wildfire, I think, would be one of those magical.
Qyburn and all his.
And
Qyburn
and maesters in general. They
yeah.
seem to
yeah.
be like the wizards of the modern world, who mm-hmm. most of them have kind of foregone magic and gone for more traditional scientific methods of thought.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think most of their foundational knowledge came from when they lived in a world that was more magical.
Right. By the way, just to step back for dragons, you talked about how they died off. That was because they were kind of bred to death, inbred to death.
Mm.
Because they didn't want to do anything with the dragon, so they kept them chained up in their
right.
in their basements. And that's why you saw dragon skulls
get smaller and smaller
mm-hmm. until they were just like nothing, and they weren't really used. And so these new wilder dragons, when they came back, they have the ferociousness of that they came from. Ferociousness. That's a word.
Ferociousness. tie a string to it.
Well, also Qyburn bringing back the mountain, I think, was pretty magical.
That is yeah. kind of a resurrection thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except you'll have the mountain who's not really himself. Right, as the head of a dwarf, probably, or something, right?
Or pig.
He does. He has the head
not.
Of a dwarf in the book. Mm. In the show, it's the head of the mountain. He's
okay.
just kind of come back. He's actually a lot like the zombies of Haiti. When you talk about those zombies, which are usually people
mm-hmm.
who sometimes they don't even die, but they're just so under the control of one master
mm-hmm.
that they become like ultimate servants to someone.
Right.
So that is actually closer to the original zombie myth. If you watch mm-hmm. the movie White Zombie, for instance, that's
mm.
Bela Lugosi like turning yeah. A woman into basically a zombie. And that's way before Night of Living Dead, which is more like the whites, except they're also have a master of their own. So
right.
they're also kind of more apt to
yeah,
the original Haiti zombies.
Yeah, the original Haiti zombie. There's is kind of the coin was turned at kind of the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah.
When they're going through translations, and yeah, the original myth of it all was from the slaves of the Dominican Republic.
Right.
Who in which is now or Haiti, which
is very sad because
it's a sad
it's
thing.
Probably
to,
just
to
like,
want to leave your own earthly body to enter into a world of peace because you're just have
yeah.
a master raining down on you and your generations. I mean, it's a sad origin story, and I can see how escaping into the world of the zombie might have been mentally beneficial.
Magic's more magic.
Magic is real to those who believe in it. I think it was for them.
Crush psychology, which is probably what it actually is. Psychosis.
Speaking of psychosis, who wants to play a game?
Yay!
Games!
Skill transition.
So, for those who are listening on iTunes, please check us out on youtube.com/AfterBuzzTV where you can watch our trick. I'll do my best to try to explain it to you, to those who are listening. But we also have...
Oh my god!
Yeah.
You can watch.
I don't think we've ever used that camera.
No.
Look at this camera.
All right, let's do it. We got a few more things to get through, but I'll go through the trick as quickly and eloquently as I can. So, in our story of Game of Thrones, we start off with the, let's call them the Jacks, the Lumberjacks of Game of Thrones, which let's call them the Starks, right? We got all the Stark family. They're noble, they're righteous, but they all fall one at a time. We see them all falling. Same with the queens, like Queen Marjorie, the Queen of Thorn. We'll call these the Tyrells and the Starks. All these different houses coming together, intricate plots. The kings, the Baratheons, you know, King Robert and Stannis and Renly. And, Joffrey, he was a Baratheon, right, technically? Mm-hmm. So we got the kings of Westeros, and the richest of them all were the Aces, the Lannisters, the Lannisters.
It's Littlefinger with us right now.
Littlefinger's the one dealing.
Okay, of course he is.
That's his magic name, his big finger.
So we got all these characters and all these houses, and we start off with them all together, but we end up with these intricate plots that... toss them in with each other. People die. People get thrown in jail.
We're
people have
the hands
curses.
Of George R. right now.
Yes. And I don't even finish the trick. George, like George R. R. Martin.
Tune in 2 years from now to see how this trick is finished.
Just shuffling up a little bit. Guys, go ahead and you can cut the deck.
Okay.
You cut off Ned Stark's head.
Oh.
Kristen, would you like to cut off someone's head?
Definitely.
Yes,
here we
finish
go.
Finish the cut. You can do one more if you want, no?
Sure. Yes, all right. Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's three is...
Keep cutting.
Yeah.
There you go. So, no matter how many times our characters are beheaded or imprisoned or turned into grayscale men or get tossed around throughout the world of Game of Thrones, we always meet at this table to... pay tribute and homage to the queens, to the kings.
Wow.
Lannisters always pay their debts, and we're always
that
rooting for
so
the Starks.
Cool. For those of you listening
on
iTunes,
impressive.
Yeah, the queens, the kings, the Jacks, and the Aces were all on four separate piles together, and now they're all together
ta-da!
In
ta-da!
One pile. Four for one. I don't think I explained that.
You
but
gotta
you
watch
guys,
the YouTube.
Yeah, you gotta watch
go
YouTube.
Go ahead and see, check it out. It's our little... House of Cards. No, wait.
It's a different show.
Game of Cards.
Game of Cards.
Game of Pick a House, Any House. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Abracadabra, abracadoo.
Like
moving on. What say you?
Jock and Hagar changing his face.
Hey,
that's where we are.
Let's do it. I'm glad you guys liked the trick.
That was great.
I used to want to be a magician when I was younger. I thought it'd be so much fun.
Oh, well, yeah. You are. You are a magician.
I'm a wizard.
You're a wizard, Harry. But I always thought Jock and Hagar was, like, the most magical for me, honestly.
Right.
I mean, changing your face and just, like, the process that we saw Arya go through in the House of Black and White.
Mm-hmm.
And being blind. I mean, everything in Jock and Hagar's world is magical. The coin that he gave her.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's the journey of Arya is very, like... is very trial and tribulations of the hero, you know, going through the magical, like, Hercules went through his 12 trials and feels like she's going through her own.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, from the, especially like you said, from the blind.
Yeah.
To see again. That's something that's more, you know, biblical, I guess.
Right.
It is
draw
very biblical.
Parallels to that. The House of Black and White itself was a really magical place. It really, you know, took you to this feeling of the occult. Like, this, there's a lot of magic can happen here. I know that they had, like, physical faces but mm-hmm. like in Mission Impossible, you know, where they would, like, peel it off. Mm-hmm. But I think it's even more magical next when we first saw Jack and change his face right in front of us. He kind of like turned around and did this thing.
You know what I just realized? Hmm. Michael Jackson video for Black and White. He does the same exact thing.
Oh my god!
He changes his face.
That's white.
And he keeps changing his face. He is one of the faceless.
He's quite a musical wizard himself. But yeah, Jack Nagar was definitely that moment was one of the more magical moments where we realized, wow, this guy can. I mean, are his powers bound by anything? I mean,
yeah.
It's almost like he's a genie. I name a name, they die. You know, and
yeah.
Yeah.
His powers are. We're in a world where Arya, we can see we can see her transition and her change, and so it becomes less magical and more of like assassin skills. Mm-hmm. But you still look at Jack and Agar like a wizard. I do at least.
For sure.
Speaking of wizards and witches, let's go to our most. I would think most powerful witch in the show, Melisandre, the red woman.
Yeah,
and I think the most. I wouldn't say magical, but the scene that really injected this feeling of, wow, what is possible in this show, and what is she capable of, was when Melisandre gave birth to her shadow baby.
Shadow baby.
Remember that?
The cutest baby.
From Stannis' seed. It was so disgusting. And the way we watched it being birthed and then killing Renly.
That was almost too much magic.
It was a lot of magic for the show. Yeah. So it was surprising for the show because it seems like we're so used to kind of a reserved quality to it. And this was the first time where it's like, okay,
it was almost cheating in a way.
Yeah.
It was like, but then she said, oh, I can't do that again. And so it kind of brought it back down to earth. I mean, Melisandre she wears a necklace to have eternal youth. She mm-hmm. practices blood magic, fire rituals. She sacrifices people. This is stuff that has real world parallels to our history of witches. Wicca,
the real world,
contemporary witchcraft.
I just remembered something. So Khal Drogo's like midwife, that Mara Mazdur, when she performs the mythical ritual, and it actually causes Khaleesi's child to be unborn. That's mm-hmm. sort of cursed and the
blood magic
and like a sacrifice. One of the ones that we see in this show.
That was one of the first. Yeah, and she was burned to death for it, which the Lord of Light probably appreciated. But we can see definite evidence of some kind of Lord of... I mean, the old gods, we don't really see much evidence that they are actively participating in this world. But mm-hmm. when we see Thoros of Myr mm-hmm. and Melisandre worshipping the Lord of Light, and the Lord of Light is responding in kind, when we have a real mythical, magical force on mm-hmm. our hands... And it seems to be one of the more powerful ones in the story.
Yeah, because they tried to bring back Khal Drogo, and it did not work.
Mm-mm. They didn't ask the right lord.
to end on kind of a lighter note, I wanted to bring up maybe the closest things we have to the Christmas elves.
Yeah,
which are the children of the forest.
I love it.
Granted, instead of creating toys for kids, they've created the White Walkers.
Yes.
But
of the gods.
If Santa exists in the Game of Thrones world, Santa's probably working with the children of the forest.
And who would Santa be?
Probably the Night King, because it's Game of Thrones.
And despite looking like a pile of twigs, they are friends with fire and use that.
Fireballs. They're throwing fireballs. You're like, okay. And then reanimated skeletons. I mean, there's a lot of magic when it comes to Children of the Forest, arguably the oldest creatures in Westeros, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. There's other magical shout-outs. Wargs, being able to just travel into the mind of a creature.
Orel.
Giants.
Pet eagle.
Hodor.
Oh.
Hodor.
And to end, I'd say the most magical, and this is my thought on it, mm-hmm. the most magical being / moments that we have are a result of the existence of the Three-Eyed Raven.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's ultimately the most magical corner of the Game of Thrones world that hasn't necessarily been entirely explored yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen flashbacks with Bran seeing into the future of the Iron Throne. That's parallels to our, psychics, Miss Cleo, clairvoyance, people who claim to be mediums through the spiritual world. But ultimately, I mean, we've through scientific method. You guys check out the documentary "An Honest Liar" by James Randi.
It's great. It's great. Really
You've
good.
You've seen it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great documentary. It shows kind of how magic in our world is one thing, but claiming that magic is real for the exploitation of other people's beliefs is another.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And there's a fine line to walk because I believe magic is real, but that depends on what I believe magic is. Mm-hmm. And I asked Kristen, what do you think magic is, Dave? To end on our note,
I think magic is what's in your heart and your friends and family nearby you.
Amen. Did you get that from a fortune cookie?
I just got it myself because I've been Santa Claus all along.
Whoa, he just changed his face. You guys really got to watch that YouTube channel.
That's right.
Guys, this has been fun. You know, there was so much more we could have dove into.
The warlocks.
Prophets.
Of course.
Jeez.
Oracles of Delphi and Nostradamus. And
taking people's genitals.
Santa Claus.
Creating magic out of
them. Hey, where's your Santa sweater, you guys? Santa sweater.
He is Santa.
I am Santa.
He is sweaty. Everything he wears is a Santa sweater.
Dave Child, where can people find you?
Oh, you could find me at MrDaveChild on the Twitter and the Instagrams. And also Dave Child, because I'm Dave Child. DaveChild.com.
Dave Child.
Also, check out on the top of my Twitter and at DaveChild.com. Look at my new music video where I'm dancing. And came out pretty good. So check it out.
All right. Excellent.
I'm Kristen. Definitely going to check that out. And you can check me out at Cinematic Escape on all the social mediums.
I will. You know I will. I love you guys. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry
Happy
Christmas.
Holidays. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Definitely.
From all of us here at the AfterBuzz TV studios, I'm Ryan Mulati. And always remember, you are loved, and magic is real.
Wow!
See you next time.
See you next year.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.